Welcome to the September International Break edition of the Tribune Weekly Podcast. My name is Davis Van Opdorp, and I'm joined by Matt Fort and Jonathan Harding. We're doing the podcast old school styles, talking a little bit of Germany and answering the questions you, the listeners, sent in. This is the Tribune Weekly Podcast. Davis Van Opdorp here with Jonathan Harding and Matt Ford. We're all in the house. Jonathan, take us through the match day.
European World Cup qualification, match day 8. Republic of Belarus, 0. Kingdom of Sweden, 4. Kingdom of the Netherlands, 3. Republic of Bulgaria, 1. The Faroe Islands, 1. Principality of the Valleys of Andorra, 0. French Republic, 0. Grand Duchy of Luxembourg, 0. Hungary, 0. Portuguese Republic, 1. Republic of Latvia, 0. Swiss Confederation, 3. Hellenic Republic, 1. Kingdom of Belgium, 2. Republic of Azerbaijan, 5. Most Serene Republic of San Marino, 1. Federal Republic of Germany, 6. Kingdom of Norway, 0. Northern Ireland, 2. Czech Republic, 0. England, 2. Slovak Republic, 1.
Let's get to the international break. Of course, Germany had a huge game last night and did not have a huge game in their first match against the Czech Republic. So before we get to your questions, thank you for all of you guys for sending in your questions. Before we get to that, though, why don't we first share our thoughts on Germany's performance in the international break? Jonathan, you go first.
Yeah, some great results. Great fun reading them out. Germany were really bad on Friday against the Czech Republic, but as they have so often done, they win anyway, despite playing about 60%. I think that's frustrating knowing the kind of potential that they have. But it's all softened over, really, when they win 6-0 3 days later. So, you know, they're not officially qualified, but they might as well be. And I think all interest and concern now turns to the squad. I mean, they did the job on Friday night and they impressed on Monday night. It's that simple.
Matt, did you have more concerns or more were you more impressed with Germany in the international break?
I was probably, for different reasons, probably impressed with Germany over the both games, but for different reasons. This was a team who struggled out in Prague, but still managed to come away with the win in difficult circumstances. But then in Stuttgart on Monday night, they showed precisely what they are capable of. Huge amounts of flair, a whole range of standout performances. I think, John, you highlighted Mesut Özil earlier in the day. Timo Werner outstanding again up front. Julian Draxler on the score sheet as well, despite his current troubles in Paris. So yeah, lots of positive to take from both games for Joachim Löw, but probably for different reasons.
Well, one of the biggest things I think for Germany now is that they're one game away from qualification, and they were almost perfect the last time around. They're going to be in the World Cup this time around. Basically, 2017, their schedule is all the things that they wanted to accomplish this year is almost done. So, Jonathan, do you think that 2017 was a crucial year for Germany, considering they did not perform well in the Euros in 2016?
I mean, crucial is always interesting. In a year where there wasn't a major international tournament, they still won 2 trophies in the summer. So, you know, you're talking about a Confed Cup win and an Under-21 win, which I think maybe not everybody would have anticipated. But, you know, it's crazy that even in a summer where there's no major tournament, Germany is still uber successful. And give themselves a great platform. I mean, yeah, job done in 2017. It's always been about gearing towards 2018 in Russia. Now comes the hard part. I mean, I don't really think it matters whether they'll be perfect. I think they will be. I think they'll win out. It doesn't really matter in the final 2 games. They'll get what they need. But now he has to decide. Löw has to decide about who he wants to take and how he wants to build the squad. He's talked about formation not being important. It's more about players knowing positions and being able to be tactically flexible. I think he has to get the balance right. He's the perfect man to do it. But it's tougher now for him than it ever has been, given the quality that they have available to him.
Yeah, they certainly do. I mean, they're deeper than maybe
they have ever been. Of course, I mean, Germany has always had great players, but this Germany pool is ridiculously deep. What do you make of this Germany pool? Do you think this is a good thing, or do you think this is it almost can be detrimental because Löw might not even pick the right players for the World Cup?
I think it's definitely a good thing, but I think what we're seeing now is, in fact, actually, it's a second generation of players who are coming through this German system, which was first implemented in the early 2000s and which ultimately produced that generation of World Cup winners in 2014, the Schweinsteiger, Badstuber, Podolski generation. And now we're seeing a second generation coming through. It was obviously telling, and it's been, you know, we've all written a lot about it, that they were B teams effectively that won those two tournaments over the summer. But yeah, it's a second generation of players coming through now. It's an incredible strength in depth. The one tiny reservation I would have, and I think we saw it at the Euros in 2016, was the issue of Germany and this German system over the past 15 years with their academies and their youth development. It's not produced any proper strikers. Okay, Mario Gomez, okay, Sandro Wagner. I'd say decent number nines, but I wouldn't really categorise either as absolutely world class. And Germany lacked that. They certainly lacked it in France, and it's led to the likes of Wagner getting more games. But I think now with Timo Werner getting his chance, what's he got now? 6 goals in 8 international games. It looks like Germany have now got a proper striker as well, on top of the quality that they already had.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest takeaway from 2017 for Germany, is the fact that, I mean, of course, it's not over yet, so we still have 2 more important internationals left, but the fact that Timo Werner has really emerged, you said it many times, that he's emerged as Germany's new feature striker. I mean, this was a team that was devoid of one after Miroslav Klose. I mean, Mario Gomez had been injured for many of the opportunities he could have had to be in a big squad. And now Löw has 2 options, and both of them played against Norway, and both of them did exactly what they do best. So, job done?
Yeah, Gomez is interesting because he was basically like their key player at the Euros, other than Ozil, you know. And nobody, I think, imagined that he would play such a key role. You know, the guys.
So he played that one role that nobody else could fill.
Exactly, and that's the thing. And then you bring in Timo Werner, who is a completely different striker, but works 100% better for the quality of their midfield and for the system. Where you give yourself the option of having a B kind of striker like Gomez anyway, it just adds more versatility.
Okay. Well, let's get to some of these questions now. Thank you guys so much for sending them. And you can always send us questions at Tribuna Podcast on Twitter. And also go to our Facebook page and just comment on one of the posts that we have going. Again, so thank you for the people that did comment. One of them was Felix Thompson. He was on the podcast last week. He raised a very interesting question about the Germany team. He said, Thomas Müller's situation at Bayern and Germany, ? Will he move for a first team place?
You're best to answer that, considering what you wrote last week.
What I wrote last week is basically, I think, the way that a lot of Bayern fans feel is that the fact that he's the last fixture left of Bayern Munich. Mm-hmm. He's a Bavarian player who's homegrown and is really, really good and plays really, really good for both his club and his national team. Of course, that wasn't the case necessarily last year, but I could also argue that the fact that he also had, I would think it was 12 assists in the Bundesliga last year. I don't know the exact number. Someone's going to correct me, but it's still, I mean, the fact that he was struggling and still was able to produce something like that, something that's tangible, says everything you need to know. And I think the fact that Ancelotti's not playing him in the right position and Löw on Friday did not play him in the right position, I think that is why he's been struggling. I think he will stay at Bayern Munich. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I think the club would, I still believe that the club would move on from Ancelotti before they would move on from Thomas Müller.
Yeah, I think that's the key. I think that they would rather get rid of a manager than a player like Thomas Müller because he means more to the club. And I also think that there are a number of other factors in Ancelotti's time at Bayern Munich rather than just Thomas Müller, but he plays a large role. I thought that Löw played him in the right position actually on Friday and on Monday. I just think that Germany were crap as a collective. But Müller looked actually a lot brighter and a lot better the same way that Ozil did. I mean, the first 45 minutes, Germany were actually pretty good, maybe half an hour. But the Czechs are actually not a bad side, and therefore were able to bite back a bit. I think Norway were just very poor, which is why Germany looks so good.
Yeah, Norway, I mean, I think people associate the Czech Republic and Norway as being on a similar level.
Obviously not.
They're really not. Yeah. And I mean, Norway has not, I mean, Czech Republic has played in a major tournament recently. Yeah. Norway has not. So we also have to keep that in mind with these score lines.
I think Muller's...
Czech Republic did also get beat 2-0 by Northern Ireland, and with all due respect, yeah, Northern absolutely. Ireland, they are, you know, Michael O'Neill's doing a fantastic job, and yeah. they are enjoying a massive resurgence, but... I wouldn't place too much.
No, it's not to say
the Czech Republic didn't get beat 2-0.
It's not to say that the Czech Republic are an amazing side, but they're certainly better than Norway. But that doesn't excuse the fact that Germany still played badly. But my point is, Müller was played in a better position, and I certainly feel like he was freer. I agree. I don't think he's going to leave. I just don't think he's the type. Maybe I think a lot will depend on who the new manager is for a lot of players in that squad.
I think on Müller. The negative common denominator there is Ancelotti. I think he's been played in the right position under Löw consistently, apart from one under-par tournament at the Euros. Mm. And under Guardiola, he fitted that system absolutely perfectly at Bayern because he was in precisely those spaces which, in that system, often ended up being the most decisive areas on the pitch, which explains why he had his 12, 13, I don't know how many assists it was, but why he was such an influential player. And I think it's more Ancelotti's system that doesn't fit him rather than Müller having lost anything in particular. He won't go anywhere.
Yeah, so we all don't think he's going to go anywhere. Felix has the second question. He said, Timo Werner's image, is it beyond repair in German football? What does he need to do for his dive to be forgotten? I don't think people are really talking about his dive against Schalke against last year. I think they're still talking about it. But, I mean, he started against Stuttgart, and that was a team that I think a lot of people expected to boo him because the fact that he was a Stuttgart player, and now he has that moniker of being a diving player. But, he scores great goals for Germany, and everybody forgets about it.
It's nothing to do with his dive, is it? At the end of the day, it's down to the fact of who he plays for. Papadopoulos for Hamburg did much worse than Timo Werner last week against Cologne. A ridiculous act of play acting in the penalty area, which he was rightly booked for, I think, wasn't he, by the video assistant ref in the end. He won't be getting booed at grounds across the country for the next 12 months. But Timo Werner dived for Red Bull Leipzig, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he's become a target figure for... expressions of dissatisfaction with that particular, do we call them a club?
Yeah. Jonathan, does this dive matter anymore?
Not to Germany fans. The guy scores goals, they needed a striker, and that's that. Football has a very short memory.
Yeah. Our good friend Ali Farad, who works for El Freunde, he asked, is Sami Khedira the best human ever?
Yeah, well, this is obviously in reference to Sami Khedira, Stuttgart-born, buying 1,200 tickets and then allocating and distributing them to 15 different charitable donations for children who are sick and underprivileged and not getting the kind of life that children should get. I mean,
we should be saying that with a little bit more enthusiasm.
What a guy.
But yeah, what a
guy.
No,
I mean, you know, I'm not...
I like Sami Khedira. Good man.
Not saying it in any less enthusiastic tone, but I'm just, what a man, you know. Brilliant to see. And also the fact that after the game, he spent time with the kids as well, you know. So, yes, in response to Ali's question, no, there isn't a nicer human being than Sami Khedira.
Yeah, I mean, I think it seems like it's rare, more rare than it should be. Or maybe it's because of positive news, so not a lot of people follow it.
I mean, there isn't enough positive news. But B, I imagine that lots of footballers or lots of athletes and sportsmen do things like this, but not all of them are public knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of character that Germany wants to have in its team.
Well, I think I would suggest that most members of the Germany team would do that if they returned to their home.
You can't really say that about all national teams, though.
No, you can't. That's true.
So, and this is, I think this is one for you, Matt Ford, because you wrote extensively about this. This is from Johnny Walsh. He wrote this on Twitter. He says, why are the players slash DFB getting it so wrong when it comes to criticizing fans? And this, I think, is in reference to the Nazi chants from the game in the Czech Republic on Friday.
Yeah, I think it starts slightly before that as well. I mean, ever since the start of the Bundesliga season this year, there's been protests nationwide across all divisions against the Football Association, against the perceived over-commercialisation of the game in the fans' eyes. And they have every right to protest, and they have legitimate and valid arguments. What we saw in Prague on Friday night, we saw that. We heard the anti-DFB, the anti-FA chants again, which was again a continuation of these, I would say, very legitimate protests. However, what we also heard at the end of the game were Nazi chants and Nazi slogans, which have nothing to do with protest. That's it's a completely separate issue. Unfortunately, a lot of the comments which then came out in the media and from the DFB and from some of the players seemed to conflate the two issues. You had, for example, Mats Hummels. Probably, he probably meant it as best as he could, but he said that there's no place for people, or something along the lines of, there's no place for people who are screaming against the Football Association destroying the game. Actually, it's them that's destroying the game. Now, the derogatory chants on Friday night in Prague were not those chants. They were the Nazi chants, and they're two completely separate issues. So it's quite, I think it's very, very important to draw that distinction between the two. As for the players themselves, are they getting it so wrong? I wouldn't necessarily blame the players themselves. Players, by very nature, are not football supporters. They spent their lives growing up playing football and developing into professional athletes. They're not supporters, so I don't necessarily blame them. Maybe they should think a bit better, though. The DFB, have they got it so wrong? I think for years they probably have. They've been very much a driving force behind a rampant commercialisation of the game and an increasing sense of disenfranchisement among more traditional supporters. And when that disenfranchisement raises its head, they brush it under the carpet as being a small, undesirable minority. Well, we saw these recent protests that it's certainly not a minority. And I think the DFB they've taken steps. They've said, we want a dialogue, we want discussions, we want to talk about this openly. They've said similar things before, so I think people are regarded quite skeptically. But let's see how it goes. They've offered a dialogue. Let's see how it develops.
John, how's the DFB handling specifically the DFB protests, do you think?
Well, I think Matt pretty much talks about everything that you need to know in that situation. I think they want their cake and they want to eat it, and I think that's the problem.
They
want to make the league as, you know, as international as possible, and they want all that comes with that, but they don't want to sell their soul, but they are, and I think that's the fear. You what makes German football great, what makes people come to this country to watch football and be a part of the experience, is that it's still an experience when you go to a game, and there is still something unique about that. But that's changing, and that's a concern for the league. James Montague wrote a great book recently about the billions of football and the secret billions that is invested in football. And that are invested in football. And Germany has to be very wary of the direction that they are going and use the examples that he outlines. You're talking about the Premier League having foreign investors, or just investors, who have a bigger role to play in the club than perhaps is necessary. But clubs feel like they need the investment to buy the players to have the competition on the pitch. So they feel like they're cornered, because fans are like, we need to buy players to be competitive. So then clubs take steps to get investors who don't really have any connection with the club, but provide the finance. Okay, so then you have 200, 300 million to spend. Fine, you can do that and be competitive. But the more clubs you force to take that step to stay competitive, the less soul you have in football, because you will see more and more exceptions to the 50 plus 1 rule. You will see more and more reasons or people forcing that rule out. More and more investments come in. More and more teams in the Bundesliga will say, hey, we can pay 200-300 million now. We can be competitive in the transfer market, which means we'll be more competitive on the pitch. But at what price is that really coming? Because it's not really the 200 or 300 million in the column of transfers out. It's actually the price of the fans or the stadium or the experience or the culture of being a supporter of a club. Yeah. That's the concern.
Yeah, Germany is
and that's what the DFB has to address.
Yeah, and Germany is very unique in that way, in that they, I mean, I think when people talk about, there's another question that I'll ask eventually, basically about why the Bundesliga is losing their best players. But people forget that they have that, they're treading this line of over-commercializing and over-emphasizing their fan base. And it's a really, really thin line that they have to walk. And it's something that has been debated in Germany for years. We could do a whole podcast on the 50+1 rule. The thing is, we would be rehashing things that have been said over and over and over again. And this issue won't go away. And it's something that the DFB really struggles with. And that's why, in a way, I think in some of the protests that I see are valid against the DFB. But at the same time, I have to sympathize with them because they're trying to preserve tradition in an ever-evolving football culture.
I don't think we can overstate the importance of distinguishing between those protests and the Nazi chants, which you can imagine have caused an absolute scandal over here in Germany, where it's obviously an extremely potent and extremely touchy topic. And I think this idea of right-wing extremism in football is something that the DFB has certainly brushed under the carpet in recent years. Mm. It's a problem that exists. Right-wing parties have a stronger vote in eastern Germany, in cities such as Chemnitz and Dresden and Zwickau and Leipzig, which are only 100 kilometres away from Prague, where this match took place. So it was no surprise to see Dresden flags, Magdeburg flags, in the away end or next to the official away end in Prague. And it doesn't help then when the DFB come out and refer to these people only as hooligans or only nutcases or only as idiots. They have to step up and admit and say, no, these were Nazis. They were chanting Nazi slogans. Call a spade and face the problem head on.
There's a big difference between hooliganism and hooligans and Nazis and Nazism. And you have to differentiate between that.
All right, so let's go on a little bit of a lighter note now. James Bartlett commented on Facebook, your top three best and worst transfers of the summer. We have prepared our lists. So Matt, I think you have a pretty good one. So why don't you go first?
Right, my number one good transfer of the summer.
Start positive, I like it.
Let's start the positive stuff. Yarmolenko to BVB. I know in some areas it's been dismissed as, it's not a brilliant signing, it's not spectacular. And you're right, I don't think it is spectacular.
It's not spectacular.
But the man's got a proven track record. He scored goals consistently, domestically and for Ukraine over the past 4 or 5 years, and he'll do the same in the Bundesliga. I don't think it's fair to say, he's only done it in Ukraine. Can he step up to the Bundesliga? I think we're probably overestimating some of the Bundesliga opponents that he'll be playing against. He'll score goals.
Augsburg, looking at you.
I'm mentioning no names whatsoever. He'll score goals. He'll be fine. And most importantly, he'll bring some much-needed experience. I think he's 27. So he'll bring some experience to what is still a very young Dortmund side. They might have lost Dembele. They might have lost Moore. People forget that Pulisic is only 18.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he's 19 next
he's
week?
He's going to be 19 next week.
Which is absolutely... Yeah.
Still a teenager.
Absolutely obscene.
Yeah.
I think he's a good, solid signing, and he'll score goals, and he'll set up goals. So I'm happy with that. Number two, Badstuber. At Stuttgart, again, mainly for experience. Another young side with another young coach in Hans Wolf. I was in Stuttgart last week, and Wolf was actually keen to point out that as much as Badstuber is an experienced head in that defence, he also offers a lot more. He also offers qualities, and we saw that as well. I think on the 18 minutes in, he launched into a fantastic last-ditch tackle, which prevented Stuttgart from going behind. Also injured himself in the process, but that's Holger Badstuber for you. And then, obviously, second half, he scored as well, so he's also potentially a goal threat from set pieces. Number three, slightly left field, Jean-Kévin Augustin.
Yeah, I like this shot. It's a good shot.
Bit of French pronunciation, if Ali's listening. PSG winger slash forward to Red Bull Leipzig, 20 years old, and a very impressive first start, against Freiburg at the weekend. Yeah, I think he had three or four shots on goal in the first half. He was the main creative option that they had going forward, despite going a goal behind in that first half. And by the end of the game, he set up two goals as they went on to win 4-1. So, good player, wrong club.
All right, Jonathan, let's go to your top three.
My top three are positives.
Positives.
Okay, right.
Negative ones.
Sebastian Rudy, loved him for a really long time, and I love that there might have been some suggestion that he couldn't have done it at Bayern. The guy is a perfect signing for Bayern. He's got everything about him smacks Bayern Munich. Like, he's got the winning gene in his body. He's technically gifted. He runs everywhere, and he will slot into that team and just look like they just bought two Tolisos. Like, I think it will be fantastic for them. And also great for his Germany career because, hey, Germany needs another defensive midfielder who's world class. Mm-hmm. Florian Niederlechner is my outside shout for good signing. Obviously, he was only, I think, loaned at Freiburg last season and then permanently moved from Mainz this season. I think it's doubly good because it's also bad for Mainz because they don't have any goal scorers. Matt and I were talking about this earlier. Often a problem for sides who are facing relegation. Where are your goals coming from? I think they were wise to sell Cordoba for 17 million because, you know, that's like selling me for, I don't know, 5 million, which is ridiculous because I'm worth nothing. So
getting into valuations of John here.
Yeah, well, you know. So that's wise, but you have to think about where the goals are coming from. And I think Niederlechner has already shown at the end of last season and this season he's actually really talented. And if he wasn't German, then he'd probably be near a national team. My other good piece of transfer business is that Pierre-Michel Lasogon no longer plays in the Bundesliga because, coming back to valuation, I fancy myself to do the same similar decent job. No, I'm joking. He scored some important goals, yeah? But when you look at the way that he scored those important goals, we all could have hashed the ball in the same way that he did. I think...
You're not referring to that goal against Schalke, are you?
Yeah, honestly, unbelievable.
Any Leeds fans listening, have a look at that goal that looks like a scored against Schalke for Hamburg. A vital goal, but...
Leeds fans.
Not sure how he got it over the line, but he did.
I think the fact that Hamburg's main investor, Kuhne, said, why did we sign this guy to a mega contract, is also backed up by the fact that his performances on the pitch aren't very good, so... Thanks and goodbye, Pierre-Michel.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll just say my top three. I won't add too many more to what you guys have. But Ousmane Dembele's sale, I think, was done really well. Because it's not only because of the stuff that was going on with Dembele going back to France, but also because of the stuff that has come out since his move to Barcelona. Mm-hmm. He said that he was always wanting to go to Barcelona. And he almost went there instead of Dortmund, but thought that Dortmund was the better of his career. If he knew that... And if Thomas Tuchel, who said he knew that, then I'm pretty sure Dortmund knew that. So the fact that they were still able to get so much money for this guy and look like as good of a team with him than without him for the summer before, where Dortmund got rid of their three best players, the fact that they followed it up with this is actually not bad because...
Hey, they still made 150 million off a guy that played 50 games for
them. I'm very interested to see what Dennis Zakariah does.
Yeah, good shout.
Borussia Mönchengladbach.
I was very impressed with him.
He was very good.
Because he's obviously came in as the replacement for Mahmoud Daoud, mm-hmm. who I don't think has played for Dortmund.
No, just off the bench.
So, so he's only come off the bench, and they have already found, I think, a very viable replacement mm-hmm. for him that they're probably going to sell in 3 years because...
He's only 20
Yeah, but, I mean, you know Gladbach, Granit Xhaka gone, Daoud gone, I'm sure that Zachariah is eventually going to leave, but the fact that they...
Let's enjoy him, he's only just arrived.
Exactly. But we can enjoy him, and I think we will enjoy him, and I think that's a good one. Another one I thought that was interesting was Andre Hahn, I think, was a very... positive move for Hamburg.
Interesting.
They're not a team that makes those kinds of moves. That's probably the kind of move that Bruno Labbadia would have loved to have last season, considering that he wanted Dennis Aogo and I think someone else, and he got some Brazilian guy, Douglas Santos, and and Alan Halilovic, who is not even on the team anymore. So this is a very non-Hamburg move. That I think that, considering that Nicolai Müller got injured, I think that could be a very positive move for them.
Remarkable.
All right, let's go a little bit quicker and do our negative ones.
I think you your positives are going to link into my negatives quite well. You mentioned Zakaria, and I thought he was extremely impressive in that game, Gladbach against Cologne. The opposite of that was on the other team that day, John Cordoba up front for FC Cologne. Now, how would you replace 25 goals that Anthony Modeste scored last season that took Cologne into Europe for the first time in ages? I don't know how you replace that. I also don't think that John Cordoba's the man to do it. I hope he is. I wish him all the best. I don't want to just jump on him after two games. But the only counter-attacking chances that Cologne had in the derby, they fell to Cordoba and he didn't put them away. Against Hamburg the week after, it was the other way. It wasn't a counter-attacking performance. Cologne dominated them. It was 71 or 72% possession. And yet there was absolutely no option up front. There was absolutely no final product. And that has got to, the blame's got to lie at the feet of your striker. And that was John Cordoba. So I think, problem, but let's give him a bit more time and see how he does. Bobadilla from Augsburg to Gladbach. I'm not having that. He wasn't good first time around. He didn't score some of the goals at Augsburg either. Gladbach are aiming for Europa League, if not Champions League.
He had a good season like 3 years ago.
Yeah, sorry.
You don't pay for production you got 3 years ago. This isn't American sports.
So Bobadilla, no, sorry mate. And the final was just Leverkusen. And Leverkusen in general, just a general whole range of bad decisions which have left them in an absolute sorry state of affairs. Çalhanoğlu gone, Chicharito gone, Toprak gone, Campbell gone, Typhoon Korkut gone. He was the man, obviously. Mm-hmm. I do wonder what's going to happen to them. I'm not sure if Heiko Herrlich is the man in charge either.
Yeah, something funny about Heiko Herrlich. I loved that Rudi Fuller, in his introductory press conference, of Heiko Herrlich's introductory press conference, says, "Oh, we were looking at two other guys, but we wound up with Heiko Herrlich."
I'm pretty sure he said something similar when you unveiled Typhoon Korkut. There was nobody else available.
So nobody here's the guy that we hired.
Bayer Leverkusen.
Jonathan, your three bad ones.
Kevin Prince-Boateng, worst risk ever. Like, just don't do it. No. I don't even care that Marco Fabian's injured and this is the replacement. Of course, I care that Marco Fabian's injured, but, like, not that you sign Boateng as replacement. High wages, high risk, low reward. I also think that Divock Origi joining for Wolfsburg is not cool. Sorry, Liverpool fans. Wolfsburg are a mess. Andres Jonker has to start showing some signs of something.
Management.
Yeah, quickly. Because right now, not sure I'm convinced. And Origi's a striker, right? Not really a winger. So what, you're going to play him out wide because you've got Mario Gomez and he's a captain and he's going to play every game? Or you're going to play him behind Mario Gomez? Oh, okay, cool. He's going to score loads of goals from there. I don't know. I'm not convinced. Not convinced. I've only got two.
Okay.
Can I say Lissoga because he's no longer here again? There you go. Go 3-0.
Well, maybe the fact that Hamburg took so long to move on.
Yeah, Hamburg, sort it out.
I think this is one that's been talked about a while. I'm still baffled by the way that Schalke treated Benedikt Höwedes. Selling him to Juventus. Some of the recent comments from Domenico Tedesco was basically that he wasn't fit and he wanted to play, and Tedesco didn't want to play him, but Benedikt Höwedes wanted to play, so he thought his playing time was a threat, and so he moved to Juventus and blindsided Tedesco. But still, I still think that the whole situation could have been handled so much better. This is a guy that has spent his life, basically, the blue in his blood is Schalke blue, and you have to treat a player better that way. And to that end, I'm going to do two Schalke ones because I cannot believe what Christian Heidel is doing there. The fact that they lowballed Sead Kolasinac and reportedly were only going to give him 3 million euros a year, and the fact that Arsenal basically only had to double that, which was 7 million euros a year, which I think is what he's worth, and he was out the door. And Christian Heidel says, well, you have your price and you don't have to, and if you don't agree on price, then you can't get a deal done. Well, if your price is on the basement floor, then of course he's going to leave. You know, and it still baffles me that this
leave
is
on a free as well.
Yeah. It baffles me also that they just tried to defend it. It's just like you had a player, you couldn't resign him. That's it. But just saying something like, you didn't meet on price, or basically trying to strengthen your position at the negotiation table. You're Schalke. You don't have a position at the negotiation table. You basically...
Your position is holding onto the door to make sure that it's shut so that people don't run out.
Yeah, I mean, you also have Max Meyer and Leon Goretzka that are going to leave in the summer.
Yeah, but Max Meyer, I'd, if I was a Schalke fan, I'd want him gone.
I want him gone, sure. They could have probably sold him the summer.
They should have.
They should have.
Do not know where that lad's reputation's come from.
Yeah, well, long time ago.
The third one I want to say is, I mean, it's obviously still early, but I don't think that Dortmund is going to benefit a lot from the Omar Toprak signing.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Because basically what they did is they swapped Ginter for Toprak, right? I mean...
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of, in a way. I mean, I they made a lot more money off of Ginter. But I think Ginter at Gladbach is going to be a good Gladbach defender. Maybe he's never going to be a Dortmund defender.
Well, he showed he wasn't.
So. He certainly wasn't, of course, which is why they didn't really seem like they were going to extend his contract. Mm. But at the same time, if you're looking at it that way, swapping Toprak for Ginter, I don't think you got better in that transaction.
So. You got more experience, but maybe you didn't get better.
Interestingly, Toprak was Thomas Tuchel's ultimate ambition as a signing, exactly. Wasn't he? He was after him for ages.
So he arrives at the moment that deal goes through,
Tuchel's out the door and doing photo shoots in New York.
So since we are talking about transfers, let's get to Joshua Klocke's question. He asked this on Twitter. He said, what do you make of the mass exodus of quality players leaving the Bundesliga this summer? Coincidence or cause for concern?
No. I think the Bundesliga has long been a league that has set itself up to benefit greatly from disproportionate pricing from the Premier League, as any league that produces quality youngsters would. I'm sorry, but if a team from England that finishes ninth every season is offering 60 million for your best central midfielder, and that 60 million can go a long way to securing the future of the club, sure, you're going to take it. Because in most Bundesliga clubs' cases, they have enough confidence in their academies or the teams around them to be able to buy someone and then move on. I mean, everybody talks about Bayern Munich buying players from inside the Bundesliga, but Dortmund have been buying players from other Bundesliga teams for a long time, and Gladbach have been doing it as well. And, you know, basically other Bundesliga clubs have as well. It's just that they don't buy as high profile. But people make sensible signings and young players move from team to team. And I don't think it's anything to be concerned about. I'd be more concerned about what's happening off the field before what's happening on it, because that will later have an impact. I think the problem is that if the Bundesliga starts becoming a league where teams are spending 70, 80 million, and that's when suddenly your Werder Bremens are buying people for 30 million or whatever it is, that's when you can start to be a bit like, wow, how did we get here so fast? That's where I'd be more concerned. I don't think anybody. It just makes sense. Yeah. It's a sensible business plan. Yeah. I don't think it's anything to be worried about, no. To be honest. And also, if Bundesliga clubs play as savvy as they did with Dembele, I mean, come on. The guy was bought for 15 million. He played one season, one and a half seasons for you. 50 games. He single-handedly wins you the German Cup. Everything's great. And you sell him for 10 times what you bought him. That's just sensible, man. Mm-hmm.
Sensible, man. Similar what do you make of this, Matt?
Similar story with like Leroy Sané as well. I think going to City. But I think for example, Sané is probably an example of a relatively small number of very, very high-profile moves, which make the problem seem exaggerated. Exactly. Than it is. All right, De Bruyne, Sané, Mkhitaryan, Gundogan have all left. Now Dembele to Barcelona as well. I think the problem's made worse than it actually is. Probably the fact that the moves to the Premier League plus the Dembele one are so high-profile probably makes the problem seem a little bit worse than it is. There's such a depth of talent in the Bundesliga. Yeah. And
it's easy to say, oh, look, three or four transfers for 60, 70 million plus, that must equal a problem. It doesn't really. Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much again for all of your questions. You can always send us questions, like I said, at Tribuna Podcast on Twitter and also on our Facebook page. Be sure to like and subscribe to our podcast. You can also leave a friendly review for us on iTunes. That's how we increase in the rankings. You can follow Matt Ford at Matt_4, the number 4D. Jonathan Harding is at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's. And I'm Davis Van Opdorp at Davis_Van Opdorp. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll hope to hear from you guys next week.